Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Vitality Explorer podcast. My name is Dr. Alan Mishra, and as always on the podcast, we start with a quote, and I've actually got a couple quotes, and these are both about time. Number one is from Leo Tolstoy, and quote, "The two most powerful warriors are patience and time." The two most powerful warriors are patience and time. And the second one is from Steve Jobs, quote, "The most precious resource we have is time. The most precious resource we have is time." So again, welcome to the Vitality Explorer podcast. My name is Dr. Alan Mishra. Our goal with the podcast and with the work with Vitality Explorers on the Substack site is to optimize vitality one person at a time. Thank you to all the brand new subscribers on Vitality Explorers on the Substack site, and please share this podcast with your friends and family if you're enjoying what you are listening to, and leave us a five-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our goal this week, again, is to enhance your vitality, to remember that vitality is a skill and that vitality is a gift you give yourself by taking ownership over your decisions. So this week's topics include, number one, dangers of daylight savings time. So we sprung forward here in the United States and other places earlier this week, so we are 1 hour off. Number two is dawn to dusk fasting decreases inflammation. And then we're going to finish this week's podcast with why we sleep. All right, and that's a fun one to finish with. But let's jump right first into that dangers of daylight savings time. And so this is really important this week. And so I'm recording this, and it'll be out on the Friday of the week of daylight savings time. And all week, this is pretty interesting, all week there's an increased risk of a fatal car accident and a heart attack. Now, not based on my opinion, that's based on a paper we're going to talk about. And the name of the paper is a chronobiological evaluation of the acute effects of daylight savings time on traffic accident risk. There's another one about heart attacks in a few minutes. But this first paper was based on a sample, wait for it, of 732,835 motor vehicle accidents. And there was a 6% increase in fatal car crashes the week after daylight savings time. That's right now in the spring. Higher risk in the spring when you spring forward. And the highest risk for an injury or car accident, I should say, a fatal car accident, was in the morning, and especially people living, like me, in the Western time zones. So if you are in the morning now, take it a little easier when you're driving. If you may be listening to this while you're driving, be careful, because there's a higher risk. And it may not be you driving. It could be somebody else who's just a little bit off. And here's the reason, is when we are sleep deprived or when we change our clocks, there's a misalignment in our circadian clock. And this also increases the risk for a heart attack. This is so scary, but it's important. Now, it's a 6 or 7% increase. That's not massive, but it's still way above baseline. It's statistically significant. The risk of a heart attack, occurs because there's more inflammation present in our system when we adjust to the time change. So just flipping the clock forward 1 hour creates, staggeringly, more inflammation in our body. And that inflammation activated by our sympathetic nervous system, okay? And that leads to a higher risk of development of a clot. And a clot in your coronary blood vessels, the ones that are around your heart, is a heart attack, okay? So there's pictures and graphics on the Vitality Explorer Substack site, which I encourage you to check out, that go into this enhanced inflammatory process. It's also known as a prothrombotic. Prothrombotic just means clots. Prothrombotic, you know, leads to a heart attack, also known as an acute, big words, acute myocardial infarction, or MI. But that overall increased risk of 7% when we spring forward is for a heart attack, and 6% for a fatal car accident should be acknowledged. All right, now here's the Vitality Explorer analysis and recommendations about the dangers of daylight savings time. And I think we often forget how crucial our sense of time is to our health and vitality. And time this week is a little distorted. We're sort of like a Picasso painting that's a little out of whack here, right? And I think when we understand that there are increased risk of car accidents, increased risk of both heart attacks and stroke, also can change our mood and our sleep quality. So all three of those, or excuse me, all four of those are important. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine has a couple things for us to consider to mitigate the risks of daylight savings time. Number one is to try to focus on getting at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep before and after the time change. And then early in the morning, head out and get some sunlight. That bright light helps to reset your internal clock, which helps regulate your sleep and your alertness. And it's very important just to give yourself a little permission to understand that even this small time adjustment of 1 hour can make a difference. So be careful, pay attention to physical warning signs such as chest pain, and give yourself a break. You may be a little, and maybe also give the people around you a little break, because they may be moodier this week. All right, so that's the dangers of daylight savings time. It's based on a couple articles. The first one, chronobiological evaluation of acute effects of daylight savings time on traffic risk, traffic accident risk. The second one is acute myocardial infarction, also heart attack, and daylight savings time. Is there a risk? And you can see the abstracts. You can see more of the references on the Vitality Explorer podcast, or excuse me, Vitality Explorer Substack site, which is at vitalityexplorers.substack.com if you're interested. Okay, second one, after a quick sip of coffee here, because I'm recording this in the morning, and I need a little sip of coffee because I got a little frog in my throat this morning. Excuse me. Is dawn to dusk fasting decreases inflammation? And sort of the subtitle I put for this particular post, which is on the Substack site, is learning how to staple your mouth shut can enhance vitality. And there's an awesome graphic that shows this sort of large human with a lot of fat cells, and then fasting from, in the morning till at night, and then going from a sort of a larger person to a smaller person with less fat cells. This is a very recently published article called Dawn to Dusk Dry Fasting Decreases Circulating Inflammatory Cytokines in Subjects with Increased BMI, or Body Mass Index. Now, here's a quote from the paper. Quote, over one-third of the world's population is overweight and at risk for accelerated aging and early death due to obesity-associated comorbidities. One-third of the world's population, accelerated aging and early death due to obesity. And I know we have some new drugs that are very helpful to help people lose weight, but this is a different approach. This is a non-pharmacologic approach. And here is the primary conclusion of this paper. Dawn to dusk fasting, quote, appears to be unique and potent treatment to reduce low-grade chronic inflammation. Let me slow down on this one. It's not just about people who are overweight that need to lose weight, but this idea that fasting can reduce low-grade chronic inflammation is so important to our vitality. Now, the study evaluated subjects with a body mass index of 25 or higher during a 30-day period of time, and they fasted from dawn to dusk, and the total fasting time was about 13 hours, average of about 13 hours. And all the subjects had a variety of body and blood markers recorded before and after the 30-day fasting time frame. And here are the results. All of these parameters were decreased in the study subjects. Number one, weight. Two, BMI. Three, hip circumference. And number four, interestingly, average resting heart rate. All right, so if you have less mass, you have less inflammation, your heart rate goes down, which is obviously good for your heart overall. And they also looked at a complex series of inflammatory markers, and I'm going to name three of them that were decreased. And these are three that people who are studying this would understand are markers of chronic inflammation. One is interleukin 1 beta, or IL-1B. Number two is tumor necrosis factor alpha, TNF-alpha. And the third one is macrophage-derived chemokine, or MDC. Now, you don't have to remember that, but the deal is fasting literally has objective evidence to suggest it not only helps you lose weight, it decreases your heart rate and decreases your inflammation. Okay, here's another quote from the paper that should scare all of us. Quote, obesity is a state of chronic low-level inflammation linked to multiple autoimmune disorders, chronic metabolic diseases, and cancers. And here's the Vitality Explorer analysis and recommendations about this particular paper and concept. Living at or near your ideal weight should be the goal of anyone that wants to lead their most vital life. And fasting in a variety of forms has scientific data supporting its value, not just for weight reduction, but for inflammatory reduction. All right, and instead of taking a pill, you can just not take anything. So fasting can decrease your inflammation. And the paper here provides new evidence in support of this concept that we have explored before on Vitality Explorers, and that is to eat less and to eat less often. That helps us control our weight, and it's pretty powerful evidence to suggest it can help us control systemic inflammation. And disclaimer here, I've been intermittent fasting for several years, and it's helped me in many ways, but it is never easy. I don't like being hungry, but I now realize that I will not die if I don't eat for a period of 12 to 16 hours. And then fasting also allows me to cheat once in a while and eat some of my favorite foods like pepperoni pizza, ice cream, pistachio ice cream especially, and not gain too much weight. So the suggestion I have is for all of us to work with our physicians, a dietitian, or other healthcare professional to determine if a fasting program can help you. And I would encourage people to share this data, because for people who are already maybe at or near their ideal weight, fasting might be a way to decrease your inflammation. And again, chronic inflammation is, as of early 2024, the number one marker for aging, right? So if you want to age slower or, you know, actually live a longer health span, less inflammation, and especially less chronic inflammation is crucial to your vitality, all right? Check out vitalityexplorers.com/substack.com if you want to see the reference, the entire abstract, the conclusion, and I think people are going to be looking at this more and more as a way to combat not just the obesity epidemic, but the inflammation epidemic that we are all experiencing. We're going to finish with a topic that I have been baffled by for a decade, all right, and that is why we sleep. Now, every animal and many plants sleep, but why? Why do we sleep? And it staggers me. I was looking this up this week in the context of a paper we're going to talk about in a second, but the world's record for fasting without solid food, remember we just talked about fasting as a way to decrease your weight, your BMI, and your inflammation, but the longest documented version of fasting without solid food is 382 days, and the record for not sleeping documented is 19 days. So we can fast for 20 times longer than we can go without sleeping. And so why is sleep so much more important than food? And why do we sleep? I know this is something that, I don't know, I don't want to say it keeps me up in the night, in the middle of the night, but maybe. And we don't often contemplate. We don't think about it. Why do we sleep? We all recognize we must sleep, okay? And we also know that poor sleep is associated with a variety of serious issues, including heart disease, diabetes, and even depression. And this paper, it's a little bit older paper, two or three years, maybe 3 or 4 years older, about, here's the title, Why We Sleep, A Hypothesis for Ultimate or Evolutionary Origin for Sleep and Other Physiologic Rhythms. And here's a staggering quote from that paper. Quote, we still do not know why sleep exists in the first place. Sleep is one of the last great biologic mysteries. All right, and there's the author then kind of pivots a little bit and says, well, we can break down the top theories of why we sleep into two categories. And we sort of intuitively know these, but he's kind of reduces them to the restorative theory, which proposes that sleep helps us rest and repair. It also helps us consolidate the knowledge that we've learned during the day and detoxify our body. There's a lot of newer evidence that suggests that during the night, your brain kind of flushes out a lot of these proteins that may accumulate. And then this theory, the restorative theory, also suggests that dreams can be restorative. And I was thinking, okay, maybe, but I don't always have like restorative kind of dreams. Sometimes they're a little quirky, right? Or challenging. The second hypothesis that's most common is the adaptive theory of sleep. And this concept suggests that sleeping helps us avoid danger and conserve energy. And part of this is, you know, the idea that animals could hide like in a cave at night or in a carefully selected area to avoid nocturnal predators, and that because they are resting at night, they need less food, and therefore there's less need to forage for more food later. So these two competing theories or complementary theories of the restoration and adaptive theory are the primary ones that are out there. And the paper does acknowledge that both of these theories make sense to some degree. But the author then inserts this novel idea into the messy mix of sleep. And he suggests that all of us, all animals and plants that sleep, have had to adapt to two separate biologic niches, okay? And that's day and night. And I thought, I was like, wow, when I read that, I'm like, what is he talking about, right? But here's some interesting quotes from the paper. Quote, early life and all subsequent life was forced to confront a dilemma on how to adapt to these two rapidly altering niches, day and night. That's the first quote. Number two is, adaptation to these two niches must therefore lie deep within our DNA, as in fact, we find the circadian clock functioning in all cells and all organisms. And therefore, sleep acts as a powerful guardian of circadian rhythms. And I have a picture up there of a plant during the day with its leaves extended, you know, capturing the light. And at night, the leaves are not extended. They're sort of wilted. It looks like the plant is like maybe dying or something. But it's actually conserving energy because there's no light. There's no need to extend its branches, extend its leaves to gather the light. So it's conserving it. So that's one example of a plant kind of sleeping at night. And the paper concludes by trying to answer this old age-old question, this biologic mystery of why we sleep. And here's the quote. Quote, sleep is a tactic evolution uses to serve a greater strategy. We sleep to allow adaptation into day and night, the niches that he talked about. So the paper, I think, is profoundly suggesting that being able to sleep well at night is a positive adaptive trait in evolutionary terms to the world being dark, right? So this is a very interesting concept. I'm not sure it's the penultimate answer to why we sleep, but it could be part of it. And here's the Vitality Explorer analysis and recommendations of this paper. Sleep is an absolutely foundational component of our vitality. I put it in the Vitality Blueprint, and if you remember that, that includes things like sleep, closeness, discipline, service, hope, fitness, time, and purpose. And I think it's crucial for all of us to understand, get a better understanding of why we sleep. And it still staggers me. And I would hope anybody can post their comments about this, but I'm still not sure we understand why we spend a third of our lives in an unconscious state. I hope this post has sparked interest for all of us to explore this mystery a little bit more. In future posts, we're going to re-review some of the ideal ways or best ways to optimize our sleep. Please post your comments below about the day-night theory of sleep and whether that makes any sense. You can also look at previous posts about how to optimize your sleep, and sort of the three principles I have about optimizing your sleep are, number one, set an intention to sleep well. Number two, make it a primary priority. And number three is develop a personalized plan. You can see a link to that. You can also read more about Randy Gardner, who holds the Guinness Book of World Records for sleep deprivation. And he stayed awake for 454 hours, or about 19 days. And some guy named Angus Barberini, who holds the world record for longest fast at 382 days. He lost 270 pounds during that time frame, going from 456 pounds to 180 pounds. And again, I kind of went down the rabbit hole on this one. You can read more about it on the Vitality Explorer Substack site. Again, this week we talked about the dangers of daylight savings time. We talked about dawn to dusk fasting decreases inflammation. And then we finished with why we sleep. But let me repeat those two quotes at the very beginning. And number one, the two most powerful warriors are patience and time, from Leo Tolstoy. And the second is, the most precious resource we all have is time. And that's from Steve Jobs. So I appreciate your time listening to the Vitality Explorer Vitality Explorer podcast this week. My name is Dr. Alan Mishra. Our goal, as always, is to optimize your vitality one person at a time. Again, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts if you enjoy this, or Spotify. Please share this with your friends and family. And until next time, get out there. As Steve Jobs, I think, would like to say, make a dent in the universe and dare to be vital. Thank you very much for listening.